You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer. How are you, Michael?
Pretty good. Enjoying the sunshine and the intense heat. It's currently 28 degrees outside, despite it being almost 7 o'clock at night.
It is pretty intense. We've had a fairly early summer, I think, in Vancouver. I don't even remember the last time we had warm weather like this in May.
Yeah, it seems like everything's happening about a month and a half early. So
I'm not complaining. It's nice.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of intensity, I hear Apple spent an intense amount of money.
Yes, they did. They just invested $1 billion, $1 billion in a Chinese competitor to Uber. And I am totally going to butcher this name, but I will do my best. Didi Chuxing. Didi Chuxing. I think that's how you pronounce it. Well, hopefully I haven't done too badly. Anyways, yes, they invested $1 billion in this company. And it's interesting. Obviously, there's going to be a billion think pieces about it, but bottom line, one, it gets them further into China. It gets them business partners that can open doors for them. And two, when the car shows up, it's going to be a very strategic partnership.
Yes.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they partner with other similar companies.
It's interesting.
North America.
I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you, but I remember when I was reading this article, I was blown away at the market share and the sheer number of rides. Did they say something like, how many millions of rides do they actually make every single day? It was really impressive.
11 million a day.
Right. So they've deployed it on a wide scale across the country.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I don't know how that compares to Uber and Lyft, but it's probably nowhere near that.
Well, Uber's in China, but they're being utterly destroyed by this. Like, there's no way they're getting those kinds of numbers. Didi has 87% of the market in China for ride sharing.
It's interesting. So, I mean, I think it makes sense. It certainly raises, I think, a lot of questions, and there should be some interesting debate about why Apple would want to do this. But like you're saying, I think it does make sense if they want to get into China. I mean, they technically are in China with the iPhone. But,
they are.
But they've been struggling in many different ways. And not just for the iPhone, but in other product markets too that they may want to get into, which are difficult because it's a different
actually,
culture.
They actually just faced some issues with iTunes Store.
There's more to talk about the iTunes Store later, but go on.
A branch of the Chinese government, I think the one that's like the 1984-esque censorship, whatever branch of their government, they basically objected to a particular show or movie or something that had recently been added to iTunes. So they pulled the license for Apple to be able to sell things on the iTunes Store in China temporarily. But
yeah. Well, that is that. You know, I'm very much opposed to censorship, but that doesn't come as a shock or surprise to me at all.
No. If you want to be in China, you end up having to play ball with them because they'll say you have to get rid of this and that'll be it.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the beast if you're going to do business there. And Apple knows that, and so does Google. So, yeah. Still, it's like however many billion people, so if they all buy an iPhone, I don't think Apple will be super concerned about removing one or two things every now and then.
No. I don't think so.
But, yeah. I think this is definitely a portent of the Apple Car. Like, by them investing in a ride-sharing company, they're gaining access to, I think, a scale that no other company currently has. I mean, we're talking about a ride-sharing company that has 87% of China and 11 million rides a day. That's way more than any other company. That's way more data than any other company.
But what does the Apple Car have to do with the ride-sharing aspect?
So my...
They just rent out the Apple Car to people and they drive them?
Precisely. So this is my big idea for where the Apple Car is going. Gen 1, they'll probably sell it to people. But down the road, the Apple Car is basically going to become driving as a service. It'll become a self-driving car. There will be a fleet of them. And you'll just be able to press a button on your iPhone or your Apple Watch, and an Apple Car will show up right in front of you. And it'll take you wherever you need to go. And you'll pay a very lovely subscription fee for that service. But it'll beat owning a car or taking the bus. So I think that's the end game. And even if Apple doesn't offer that service, they will sell their cars to someone that does as a partner. Because I think Apple realizes the opportunity to transform transportation as we know it. And having a fleet of self-driving cars that are always accessible to everyone all the time, that's a huge shift, because suddenly you don't need to own a car anymore, because there will always be a car if you need one. And because I think the current limitation of existing ride sharing, like, what are the ones here where you can go grab a car?
Well, we have Car2Go.
Right.
And we have
Evo.
Yeah, and there is Zipcar.
Right. Okay. So
there's another one that starts with an M, but I don't remember.
Moto?
Yeah.
Mogo? I think it's right. Mogo.
Something like that.
But yeah, so those companies, the cars are all sitting around, and you have to go to them.
Yeah.
But with a fleet of self-driving cars that provide that service, they come to you, and that changes the paradigm entirely, because what they can do is build an algorithm, like a machine learning platform, that redirects the cars to where they need to be or where they need to go.
Well, that makes sense. And it's not something that I think they would limit to China. Like, why wouldn't you just have
A
fleet of those cars everywhere?
Yeah. Well, that's the eventual idea.
But
they might partner with Didi in China as a test pilot.
Okay.
That's why I think they'll probably invest in other companies moving forward. Like, we might see them invest in Lyft. Or there's a new one in New York whose business model is all about treating drivers fairly. So they might invest in them as well.
Sure. Can Apple just buy all the taxi companies in Canada so that... so that we don't have an issue with them outright banning things like Uber? Because I don't see how any of this stuff is going to happen here.
So the thing is, they have a problem with Uber because it's drivers. This system, there would be no drivers. You would simply be saying, car, come pick me up.
Yeah, but those taxi cab drivers would be out of a job.
Yeah.
So wouldn't they still...
Oh, yeah, they'd
it?
Still be pissed off, of course.
Right. But what's to stop those taxi companies from This is what's annoying because they have
a monopoly. They do, but it's not the same service. Uber is directly competing with taxis because they have drivers. But
are you saying there's no, maybe, are you implying that there might be no legal ground?
Yes.
To base that argument?
That's exactly what I'm implying. So the reason they can go after Uber is because Uber is providing something like a taxi service.
Right.
Where
a driver
operates a car as a commercial vehicle, picks you up, takes you where you need to go. It's exactly like a taxi. And for that reason, they can go after them. This eventual theoretical Apple system would be just like Zipcar, which the taxi companies can't go after.
Right.
Because you are paying a subscription, in essence, to be able to use a car.
Sure.
It's just that instead of you driving the car drives itself.
No, I wish I had the numbers now, but it'd be really interesting to see how all this innovation that's happening in the ride-sharing space, specifically, I'm thinking of Zipcar, Car2Go, which are now everywhere here and in many cities across North America, how has that actually affected taxi service? Mm. I imagine it's had some impact, whether that's marginal or not, I don't know.
In cities with Uber, it's had a massive impact. Taxi drivers are basically out of business left and right. Like, taxi companies are going bankrupt left and right because of Uber. Because Uber is undercutting them and providing better customer service. So everybody in those cities, they're choosing Uber. They're ignoring
the taxis.
Do
we know that for certain, though, that it is because of Uber? I mean, couldn't one make the argument that improved local transit, improve access to transit would also have an impact, yes. Right.
But
all these things anyways have some kind of impact on the taxi companies.
They do. But the numbers we're seeing, the decline we're seeing so rapidly is very obviously due to ride-sharing companies. Like, it wouldn't be dropping this quickly if transit got better, because transit doesn't get better overnight. It gradually improves. But these companies just come in overnight, and then all of a sudden you can just pop open the app and get a car wherever you need it to take you wherever you need to go. So people are taking full advantage of that right away, and they're building a loyal customer base. All of those people are people that are no longer using taxis. So their ridership numbers plummet. While Uber's numbers go up, Lyft's numbers go up. So, I mean, it's not necessarily just Uber or just Lyft, but it's death of a thousand cuts. Like, any city where multiple companies like this are operating, taxis are going to be undercut severely. And it's not going to be gradual. It's basically overnight. Once they flip that switch, once those cars are on the road, that's it.
Yeah.
So it makes it really difficult for them.
What are your thoughts on, this is not something we've really talked about, but what are your thoughts on Uber's system where anybody can just apply to become a driver? I don't know how much, I know there's some vetting involved, but it's very minimal. And I guess my question is, and the argument that I've seen other people make, is that services like Uber fix the problem of having to deal with creepy taxi cab drivers. But
no.
I don't see how that would solve that problem.
It doesn't at all.
You know, it's really interesting too, because cab companies they've had pressure from consumers about those kinds of problems. So now on every taxi, you always see like a phone number that you can call in and file a complaint. If your taxi cab driver's done something wrong.
And
but it doesn't seem to mitigate those issues all that much, because I can tell you that I've heard so many stories from women that I know, specifically ex-girlfriends and other people, that they've been in a cab at some point and a cab driver has asked some kind of inappropriate question about their personal life or some invasive question. And it doesn't really happen as much to guys, but it happens way, way more more to women. And I'm curious how Uber and Apple, if they get into this, well, I guess the self-driving car solves that.
Yeah, but there's no creepy driver to do anything to you. I mean, unless the car becomes sentient and decides to drive you off a cliff, but...
I'm going to try not to think about that.
Yeah. I don't think Uber is really doing anything. In fact, I think they're doing a worse job than the taxi companies. There is practically zero accountability for these companies. Yeah. They're treating the drivers like users of their app. They're not treating them like employees. The setup process to become a driver is absurdly simple.
Yeah.
There's no...
Well, that's one of the big selling points now, because I've even heard this on ad reads for podcasts that advertise Uber.
Yeah.
They say you can drive for Uber, sign up for the app and basically become a driver and you get paid. And that's very seductive. It's a very seductive offer to get money like that, where you have a flexible schedule. You can just get in a car, drive anytime and get paid for it. But on the other hand, there's the issue of safety. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's especially a problem in non-first world countries where Uber's operating. There have been numerous cases of sexual assault with Uber drivers in India, for example, to the point where this is actually really funny. And it, well, not funny, but I guess darkly funny. Uber's solution to this problem was not to vet drivers in India more, or have more extensive screening, or have cameras in the cars, or any of the things that you'd think would actually prevent this sort of incident. They added a panic button to the app.
Okay.
They basically added a rape whistle to the app, and that was it.
And what does this do?
I think it's supposed to alert police.
Okay.
And it tells them where the car is or something. I don't know.
Well, isn't that helpful?
I guess, but it's kind of too late at that point, isn't
it? But should they not have anything at all? I mean, it's better than nothing. They need to know at least when something's
happening.
What
I'm saying is it's a Band-Aid. They're not acknowledging the problem. They're not saying we need to be doing a better job of checking drivers out.
Oh, absolutely. I think it starts at the beginning of the hiring process.
Like, instead of having any accountability, they're just putting they're putting the onus on the victims. They're basically saying, if one of our drivers decides to get busy with you, press this button. Like, you know, like, for a company to say that is enormously irresponsible. Like, I used to be a user of Uber, and I have completely destroyed my account. When they asked me why, I said I can no longer in good conscience support you. And it's true. They are just an awful, awful company. And if you work for them, or you support them, or you sign petitions in their name to get them in your city, stop. Like, the technology is the right idea, but this company is going about it probably the absolute worst way you can go about it.
They got in trouble last year.
They've gotten in trouble multiple times.
I haven't
for
really
multiple
followed
reasons.
Up to see what they're actually doing about this. didn't the CEO say some things too that were just really questionable?
Yeah, he said lots of things.
But it's hard, you know, because you don't want to lump the employees that work there.
No.
Under, like, because it's just a job to many people. And it's easy to say, well, quit because you're supporting this awful company, but it's not that easy for a lot of people.
No, it's not. And in fact,
sure, there are plenty of people that work at GoDaddy that think their marketing tactics are slimy, but
that's the marketing. I mean, it's terrible, but at least the company itself isn't doing anything extremely questionable.
I don't know anything about Lyft. They're not as popular as Uber, right?
They're not.
Now, Lyft, how are they different? How are they better?
They're not dramatically different. I would say they're probably a little less morally questionable than Uber is, but they're still not entirely ethical either.
This is a hard problem to solve. I'm more inclined to feel that that it's just a difficult problem to solve, that it, that these companies aren't inherently evil or trying to do something that would put people in harm's way?
I would disagree. I think they know exactly what they're doing, because they are creating an economy where people essentially become wage slaves. They are creating an economy where you have to serve people, and if they don't like the service you've provided, you are blacklisted and are unable to make money again.
Oh, so you actually, you're banned from being a driver?
Eventually, yes. If enough people find your service unsatisfactory and you get a low star rating, you actually get removed from search listings. Like,
but are there any cases, are you saying that there are cases where somebody is getting removed even though they haven't provided? Like, I don't know where you're going with that.
So, you know how on Uber or Lyft, you can review your driver? Yeah. So they've set up a system where if your star rating falls below a certain threshold, mm-hmm. you start losing out on customers.
Okay.
Like, you will not be paired with somebody that needs a ride. You essentially fall off of the service as your star rating goes down. And that is...
But do they make it hard to get to that point? Because, I mean, first of all, why would somebody rate my service as poor if I do a good job?
It's because not something good because they didn't to worry take about. Their luggage out of the trunk.
Oh, I
because
see.
They didn't smile sure. at them.
Right.
Like any one of 5,000 reasons.
So I guess, I would like to really know more before I comment on that, because I don't know how the rating system works. Like, how many reviews does it take to get to X, whatever that threshold is, to get
I'm not sure.
That? Like, is it 1,000?
This is happening.
Right, sure. I'm sure
and
it is.
What I'm saying is you're creating a culture where people are required to give 200% to make very little money, all to appease the customers of this company that you don't even work for.
Right.
You're just
right.
using the app to try and make money. You're not an actual employee of Uber. You're just saying, I've chosen to be a driver. And they've made this legal argument thousands of times. Like, they desperately don't want people that drive for Uber to be called employees of Uber, because then they would have to provide minimum wage and benefits, and they don't want to do that.
No.
So people make very little money on these services, so they end up having to do multiple services. So like in San Francisco, for example, people that are Uber drivers, they might also pick up TaskRabbit or any one of a dozen other services like it. So it's creating this system where instead of having a regular job, people are being forced to pick up all of these little micro jobs. And if they don't do it fast enough, or they don't do it well enough, or if the customer was in a bad mood and just didn't like them for whatever reason, they can suddenly find themselves out of work.
But the way that it's advertised, though, it is that it's something that you do as a part-time thing here and there to make extra money. It's your own damn fault. Don't make it a full-time
That's
thing.
That's the insidiousness
but
of it, though.
But they're being upfront with it. They're saying, you're not an employee. You're not going to get benefits. This is just something you do to make some money.
It's social engineering, though. They're creating this framework, and people are using it how they will. And they're doing nothing to stop that behavior.
Right.
So they're enabling
a system. But to me,
this
seems like a people problem.
It is, but they're not doing anything to curb it. They're allowing it to happen. They're saying, we're fine with this. We're fine with people's lives being destroyed. We're fine with creating a culture where customers are extremely right all the time.
I get where you're going with this, because the problem is that even though their intent may not be malicious, they are somewhat taking advantage of people in that, because they don't have this employer-employee contract in place, it is like analogous to this cheap labor that kind of gets done
yes.
under the table, and there's no, you know, there aren't the same consequences.
There aren't the same protections for employees. There's no recourse if something goes wrong.
Okay.
They're creating a system of cheap labor where people just do stuff for them. And in return, they're giving them almost nothing. So, yeah, it's extremely dangerous, and we need to be really wary of it, because as all of these little services build up and grow, more and more people are going to get consumed by it. Like, it's eating jobs. Like, people, and I think this is a big problem in the States with unemployment. People that find themselves out of a job because of the economy, they are turning to these services as a way of making ends meet. Like, it's not just people in secure positions are suddenly choosing to do these jobs. In a lot of cases, people are forced to do these jobs because they have no other choice. Because they've kept the barrier to entry for these apps extremely low. So they're basically saying, if you have nowhere else to go, if you really need a job, just open the app. It's
a problem.
It's seductive.
It's a problem.
And it's an extremely self-destructive path, I would say. So, yeah, I don't know where this is going to go, but nowhere good unless some regulations get put in.
I think, speaking of self-destruction, that is a great segue into, I think, what should be our next topic, which is talking about the destruction of iTunes downloads. And it's not news to anybody that if you look at the data that we have, year over year, iTunes downloads, this is people buying stuff, buying full albums off of iTunes, has declined dramatically year over year for the last several years. It's been and actually, if you do a forecast for the next few years, it's very predictable that it's going to continue to decline as streaming music services take over. And what's interesting to me is that, I don't think it'll come as any surprise to anyone who knows anything about Apple that they're not afraid to kill a perfectly profitable product.
Yeah.
If it means, future development of a product they think is going to be the way we do things or the way whatever it happens to be. So what's interesting about this is that they're estimating iTunes music downloads will still be worth an estimated $600 million in 2019, but that's down from peak revenues of $3.9 billion in 2012. So if those numbers are anywhere near accurate, that is a substantial. It still sounds like a lot of money, but when you compare $600 million to $3.9 billion, yes, that is a massive, massive loss, and it's only going to get worse. Now, obviously, I think a lot of people are probably screaming, no, we can't switch to streaming because of X, Y, and Z, whatever those reasons are. And certainly, Apple Music has struggled a bit. Many have called it a beta service, even though Apple doesn't want to slap the beta label on it. And of course, I think we can talk about the rumors of the major rebrand / 2.0 launch of Apple Music. But what are your thoughts on this? To me, I think this is perfectly logical, but I'm not sure I 100% agree with they'll kill it in the next 2 years. I think within the next somewhere between 3 to 5 years, we'll see it. But two years seems pretty soon.
Yeah, 2 years is extremely premature. What I think we'll see is that, as always with Apple, they never just kill something off entirely. They basically stop developing it. They just kind of let it wither away. So I think that'll be the same here. We'll see Apple Music continue to get improvements. We'll see Apple Music continue to grow in terms of content and other services. And the iTunes store will slowly just start to decay. Like, they will basically give up on it. It'll still be there, but Apple Music will get the full attention of their developers.
Now, there's been long rumors that we're going to get like a completely new Apple Music app that's completely separate from the crusty iTunes infrastructure.
And I'd like a pony. No, it's not going to be separate, unfortunately.
Is it just going to be a brand new iTunes app? Because that'd be fine as long as it's rewritten and fresh.
I don't know. Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned that because today Apple announced that they've killed WebObjects, which is what the App Store and iTunes Store run on.
Now, what does that mean for a lot of people that don't know the history of WebObjects? What are they and what makes them bad?
Okay, so WebObjects was a web app framework developed by Next back in the 90s. This was Steve Jobs before he came back to Apple. It was essentially a framework that allowed people to create complex web applications quickly.
Yeah, we're talking like 25 years ago.
Yeah. And
it's a while.
It hasn't changed a lot since. Hence the
You're
problem.
You're being very kind.
Yes, I am being very kind. Frankly, it's terrible. It's slow. It's buggy. It needed to die a long time ago, and it's about goddamn time. So a lot of the Apple Store framework is built on WebObjects. So if they're killing it, that begs the question, well, what about iTunes and the App Store? Are those going to become fully native? The answer is maybe.
What's confusing, and I sincerely hope that in this revamp, if it still is the iTunes app, but just redone, it has to be a lot less confusing. And I know I am not the only one here, but the Apple Music integration seems tacked on to this old app. And the iTunes Store is still there. And it's very confusing sometimes because depending on what tab in the interface you're on, you may think you're on the streaming music portion, but you're looking at iTunes. Like I look up an album and the price will come up. I'm like, why is it showing me the price? I'm subscribed to Apple Music. Oh, I'm on the wrong tab. I got to go to the Apple Music tab, then search for it. It's just a giant pile of garbage.
Yeah, I think on a much earlier episode, I described it as schizophrenic. And it still is. Like, the context switching between streamed content and purchased content is absurd. It's just absurd. Like, my music, fine. You have everything regardless of what it is. That's totally fine. But then the context switch between, okay, now I'm on the iTunes Store. Now I'm looking at Apple Music. Really confusing.
And it looks exactly the same, too.
Yeah.
That's what also makes it additionally confusing is that the apps, like the difference between the iTunes Store where you buy stuff and the Apple Music Store, the pages look the same.
Yeah. And the search box.
Oh, God, the search box.
On the iTunes Store, it only lets you search the iTunes Store.
If
you're
so
on
bad.
The My Music tab, it lets you search between My Music or all of Apple Music.
I got a headache just thinking about it.
Yeah,
so bad.
It's extremely poorly implemented. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. The rumor goes that there is a dramatic redesign of Apple Music occurring at WWDC for iOS 10. And
lyric
OS
integration.
10,
that's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
And big cover art. A lot of focus on artwork.
Yeah. So apparently it's
liner notes. Are we getting liner notes back? Do I have to stop buying vinyl?
I think we are. I think that'll be part of it. We're apparently getting a new revamped black and white interface with an emphasis on cover art. And that sounds alarmingly familiar.
Wait, black and white?
Yes.
That makes no sense.
So
they go full Instagram?
I'm getting to that. So Instagram unveils a new black and white UI with a focus on the photos, and music supposedly is going to have a black and white UI with a focus on album art. Can you see where we're going with this? OLED.
I think so. Yeah.
OLED.
You know, it was interesting. I don't know if you follow the Apple Music account on Instagram, but they changed their icon on Instagram, like their actual profile avatar. and it looks like the Instagram icon. It's like candy color, the same colors, except that it has the Apple Music logo in that. I thought it was really weird.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know if there's some sort of symbiosis between the two.
Yeah. If I had to guess, I'd say they're up to something. I'd say that Instagram knows.
You think there's
something.
Some kind of integration between the two? Maybe
I'm not sure.
In some capacity,
I'm not sure if there's going to be integration per se, but I think Instagram is aware of upcoming changes. Let's put it that way. My thought is that iOS 10 is going to prepare us for the shift to OLED next year.
I think they're bringing back Ping. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
I wonder how is Apple's new social, what's it called?
They're killing
Connect.
It.
Like, no one's using it.
Yeah, they're killing it.
And it wasn't well implemented.
Well, they're not killing it. They're just removing the tab because it really didn't need to be a main tab. They thought people were going to use it by making it a main tab, but it's just taking up space.
Like, I do see a lot of bands posting and using the
they
Connect.
They do, yeah.
But have you ever looked at the comments? There's so much spam in there.
Oh, I know.
There's so much spam.
Well, there's so much spam on Instagram as well with celebrity stuff.
That's true.
So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. And I think they cross-post to Instagram anyway.
They do.
So, yeah.
So they should just, because Facebook owns Instagram. I think the Apple Connect thing that they did should just be like it should just be Instagram, but like kind of built in. I don't
know
how that would work.
Maybe that's why the UI thing. I don't know.
Because Apple should just stop trying to do these social things. They just don't know how to do it.
I've always said they should just buy Twitter.
Yeah. Well, and musicians are using Instagram anyways.
Yeah.
For all their stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I think these UI changes are basically a precursor to shifting to OLED. I think iOS 10, I think what's going to happen is they're going to unveil a new UI, and it's going to be mostly black and white with some splashes of color with an emphasis on content, colorful content. So photos, everything will be stripped away except the beautiful photos you've taken. And they'll probably describe it as something like a high contrast design, something like that. And they might announce dark mode in iOS 10. If not, then they announce this high contrast design. And then when the time comes, everyone's updated to this design. They just flip a switch. Yeah. What was white becomes black. What was black becomes white. Bam.
So do you think with iOS 10 that we're going to see some kind of major, other than dark mode, do you think they're going to do something more radical with the color?
I think they will. Like, if that rumor is true, then it sounds like they're rethinking how to use pixels on the screen, because you kind of have to do that for OLED, because as I've stated multiple times before, on an OLED screen, any black pixel is off, meaning it's not consuming power. So if they rethink the operating system around the lines of, okay, based on that, how do we make the best use, the most efficient use of the pixels on the screen? How do we make a UI that can display the maximum amount of content while using the least number of pixels in order to preserve battery life? And that, I think, is what we're going to see in June. I think we're going to see iOS UI sort of shift away from that sort of highly glossy, pixel-rich design, and I think we're going to see the UI kind of fade back a little bit, and just the content will move forward. So that then it makes it really easy for them to transition to an OLED screen next year, because then they can just flip things around, and then suddenly maybe 25% of the screen is on at any given time. Massive battery life improvement.
No, there's no doubt, of course. And not just from that, but the OLED stuff in general.
Yeah, in general, it uses less power.
Right.
But if you then optimize the UI around using less pixels, you can get even higher savings. So I think if those rumors are true, this is what we're going to start to see from iOS. We're going to start to see the UI sort of fade away and the content kind of move forward a bit. So, I mean, that's what we've seen with Instagram, and that's probably what we're going to see with music. I wouldn't be surprised if the entire OS changes with it, but that remains to be seen. Obviously, if it does, then that'll be a pretty big hint. But yeah, back to streaming. I think the writing's pretty much on the wall for physical purchases, for download purchases. People are using streaming more now than ever, and streaming services are just exploding in terms of subscribers, especially Apple Music. Like, they started with nothing, and now
last I heard it was like 11 million or
13
more.
Million.
13.
Not even a year later, they're at 13 million. Yeah. They're approaching Spotify numbers.
Yeah, and they're gonna surpass Spotify for sure. But, you know, this is one of the things that frustrates me about the argument that, well, I will not pay for streaming because I want to actually support the artist. So I'm still going to either buy CDs, buy vinyl, or I'm going to buy albums off of iTunes because they get more money from the purchase, which may be true. Mm. Well, it is true. But the problem is with streaming has to work at scale. Or sorry, it can only work at scale. This is what's so frustrating about it. And you got sort of the chicken and egg scenario here, because in order for this to work, Apple would have to get rid of the iTunes purchase aspect of the store at some point.
I don't know that they necessarily need to get rid of it. They need to reach a saturation point
right,
for subscribers.
They need to get to the point where we have not tens of millions, we have to have hundreds of millions, if not billions of people paying $10 a month. Yeah. That's the only way artists are going to get paid.
Yeah. But on the flip side of the coin, artists still won't be making that much money off of album sales. Like, in their contracts, they actually make very little. And for streaming, they make even less.
Yeah. But maybe it's time to revisit the rules, like, instead of paying. As far as we know, they get paid per stream, per song.
Yes.
So why don't they just make a deal where if somebody streams an entire album top to bottom, they have this data, they can get that data from playback.
Yeah.
Then if the listener has listened to the entire album, then pay them X, whatever that value is more.
I'm sure Apple would
pay them double.
I'm sure Apple would be willing to implement a system like that. But it's kind of down to the music companies to care enough to ask for that in the first place. And they don't. They don't give a shit. They're making tons of money and they don't care. So,
well, you know, like, I don't even know what to say to that.
The contracts with musicians are historically terrible. Like, the only way a musician really makes money is off of tour.
Yeah, merchandise, tickets.
People going to see it. Yeah. That's how they make their money. They don't make their money off of downloads. They don't make their money off of streaming. They make their money off of touring.
Yeah. It also saddens me when I hear people that just listen to crappy quality music on YouTube and they're fine with that. and they're not interested in paying for music.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a small subset of people, but it seems to be getting ever larger.
Yeah, and
but I think YouTube has this thing now where music that's illegally downloaded, they actually pay the music companies.
Yeah, and there's now that new subscription thing on YouTube, YouTube Red. I don't know what the subscriber numbers are.
It's US only still.
Yeah,
as far as I know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I would pay for it. I'd be waiting for it. I would gladly pay whatever $10, $12 a month.
Yeah, like,
to get rid of ads.
I'm not that concerned about YouTube. I only go on there occasionally, so it's not a big deal for me. But I think until the music industry as a whole sort of shifts their perspective on things, I don't think we're really going to see huge traction on any of that stuff. Like, we're just not. Like, I know I sound really cynical about it, but it's the way...
It's okay to be cynical.
It's the way things have been for decades now, and it's not going to change anytime soon. Not while the people that are in power are still in power. Like, I'm sure Apple...
must destroy the status quo, because I refuse to accept.
Yeah, this. Like, I'm sure Apple, if they could, would implement systems that pay artists fairly. Like, I'm sure they would do that. But... it's up to the label to go, we want you to put this in so that we can pay our artists. But they don't, because they don't want to pay artists based on that sort of thing. Or they do, but not a lot. Honestly, I could see Apple becoming their own label at some point. With Apple Music, with Beats One, with all of that stuff, I could see them start to produce original content. For example, they paid for Pharrell's Freedom music video. That was produced by Apple. That wasn't produced by the label.
I don't know anything about it. I haven't seen it.
It premiered exclusively on Apple Music. Like, that was the song that sort of started Apple Music back when they announced it. Like, that was the exclusive single that was part of the launch. But yeah, I could see them start to move into a space where they begin creating a lot of original content, where they start finding new artists, helping them out, signing them up. Their music goes exclusively on Apple Music, where they'll have access to 13 million plus listeners, and they can be promoted on Beats 1 or Beats 2 or Beats 3 or however many stations they end up expanding to. Like... this platform is something that could really grow over the next few years. Like, they, Apple Music, well, the interface is kind of crappy right now.
It will grow.
Like, Apple Music, the interface is kind of crappy right now. But Apple Music, the platform, has so much growth potential.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, for example, we already know that they're working on a TV show with Dr. Dre. Called Vital Signs. Like, that's going to be a thing. They're going to have a show on Apple Music, which is kind of strange, but okay, I'll go with it. It's a bit odd to have a TV show on Apple Music.
It does seem a bit strange.
Yeah. Obviously, they are leaning heavily into expanding original content. Like,
what about Spotify? Do you think they care about Spotify?
I don't think they're concerned.
Do you think they'd ever try to buy them?
No.
Because at some point, Apple Music will probably surpass them.
Oh, yeah, easily. Like, I don't think Apple is particularly concerned about Spotify. I think they've released the product they're going to release. They're going to continue to iterate on it. And they're not really concerned about the competition. No. The only time Apple is ever concerned about the competition is if they're doing something that attracts customers. Yeah.
I think, if anything, the next logical company to buy Spotify would probably be Google.
Yeah,
because probably they're having a more difficult time.
Google Play Music has not taken off at all. So strategically,
and not for lack of trying, because they've done a lot of redesign. Their interface isn't bad.
Yeah, they've definitely tried a lot.
They did the Google Material redesign thing for Google Play.
Yeah, I'd say overall the experience is still pretty clunky on that app, and the service in general. But yeah, I think strategically buying Spotify would make the most sense for them, if only for talent acquisition. But more importantly, they could just kind of merge Spotify directly into their services. I mean, Spotify recently just announced that they were going to be running their entire platform on Google Cloud services. So the partnership is kind of already there now.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. So that could actually end up happening if Spotify starts to go south a little. Then Google can be like, hey, buddies, we noticed you're not doing that well.
Honestly, I just think everyone should cancel their streaming service and just buy a Pono player.
Yeah. Go with Neil Young. That Neil Young way. Buy a ridiculously overpriced media player that can only play music that five people can hear the difference of.
That was a joke, people.
Yeah.
Don't take it so seriously.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm a total
audio.
Excuse
me, sir, where can I buy Ogg Vorbis files? Do you have a player that can run FLAC at 24-bit?
It is the superior format!
Sounds like Ferengi.
And where can I acquire some females?
God.
This is getting into Grand Negus territory.
Yeah.
The Pono player is the greatest thing in the world, Quark!
That was actually not half bad.
Definitely sounded like a Ferengi.
Yeah.
Some kind.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, I'm as much of an audiophile as the rest of them. But even I'm like, yeah, no. After a certain point, you cannot hear the difference. Like,
It really depends. It really does depend on your hardware because, obviously I have above average hardware here, but I actually did take the time to listen to a high-res audio sample that was at 24-bit, 192 kilohertz, granted, listening through good headphones on a good DAC, was impressive. The dynamic range on that, it was incredible.
Yeah. But the lowest common denominator person is not going to have $400 headphones.
Well, I mean, you got people like my girlfriend that listen to their music on their iPhone speaker, and they're happy with that.
Yeah.
And to me, that's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, for most people, they're not going to hear the difference. They're not...
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't offer at least an option.
I honestly
really believe, there is an option on iOS right now that you can switch on for high quality streaming music. Now, we don't know what high quality, quote unquote, really is because they don't publish the bit rates, but that to me should be an option. Like that should be a, do you want high res audio or not? If you have the bandwidth, you know what? Actually, don't even make it an option. If you have the bandwidth, just, we have adaptive streaming technology.
Yeah.
Just ratchet up that audio quality when you have better bandwidth and also do the reverse when your bandwidth sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think.
Although that'll probably bother purists that demand the most pristine of quality no matter where they are.
We need 128-bit with a
128.
Platinum gold cable connection.
Gold Press Latinum cable connection, yeah.
I think one of Prince's albums went Gold Press Latinum.
But yeah, I think Apple can definitely offer it as an option. I think this year would probably be a good year to do it because they're getting rid of the headphone jack on the iPhone. They're moving to Lightning headphones. So I think with the enhanced data bandwidth on that connection, I think it would be a good time to say, well, now that we have this way better way of connecting headphones to the iPhone, here's this new quality level.
I think it's going to happen at some point. I don't know if it'll happen this year or the next year, but I think it's inevitable because it's not the first time that Apple would do something like that. Because
no, they've done it before.
They had, wasn't it? That all music on iTunes was 192. I think anything that you bought was somewhere around there. And then they
upgraded it to
they
AAC
upgraded all
plus
the files
256.
To AAC 2. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if they've done that, they're obviously no strangers to re-encoding large swaths of data. So they have the ability to do it.
Oh, yeah. They can absolutely go to a higher bit rate if they want to.
I think
that's not going to be a problem.
At the
for
very
them.
Least, there should be the minimum should be 320 AAC with an option
to go to 512.
With an option to go with a higher bit rate.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, if they put a good quality DAC in there with the Lightning the headphones.
Yeah, they have to do that for sure. But does AEC have a higher lossy
bit rate than 320? AEC is a lossless format.
It's a lossless format?
Yeah.
Okay.
But obviously the quality is going to be affected by the bit rate.
Right. Right.
But yeah, it's lossless. I mean, I guess the purists will say that AAC isn't as lossless as others, but...
deceiving thing about using the terminology of high-def audio is that in order to qualify for high-def audio, anything that is greater than 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz is considered high-def audio. So you could have the same resolution of 44.1, which is what CDs are at, but you could have a higher resolution. You could have 24 bits.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Well, that's the format that Pano has.
Right.
But yeah, you're not going to be able to hear it if you're playing it with Beats headphones.
No, you need good headphones and a good DAC.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, that stands for Digital Audio Converter.
Yes.
Conversion or convert? It's converter.
Converter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of back and forth going. I don't think a lot of people realize what's going on inside their devices because your headphones, I'm not even sure people even are aware that like the headphones they're listening on are analog devices.
Yeah.
So there's an analog signal going into your iPhone that has to be converted to a digital signal. Then the signal going back to the headphones has to be converted from digital back to analog.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a completely backwards technology. Like this is what they're going to get up and say in September. They're going to say this technology is over 100 years old. It's ridiculous to have to convert it every single time, digital to analog, back to digital, back to analog for everything. Like it's completely absurd. And that'll be one of their main talking points.
Sure.
We can do better. We can come up with something that sounds better, runs better, is more efficient. And yeah. Like that's where we have to go.
Well, let's hope that happens. At the very least, I'd be happy if the Apple interface got a makeover.
Yeah.
Sorry, the Apple Music interface, to be specific.
Well, I think we can trust the source on that one. Mark Gurman.
Mm-hmm. He's a good one. He's a good one.
He knows all their secrets somehow.
Yeah, it's...
like
magic.
I think we can pretty much expect his iOS 10 post any day now.
Yeah.
we're a month away from WWDC as of today. So
Who knows? I mean, if you were really to go back and just add up all the rumors that he's gotten right over all the things that he said leading up to product announcements, you could probably compile a pretty lengthy list of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like the past year or so, he's gotten everything right. Like he's had their entire keynote lined up in his posts weeks before it actually happens.
Yeah.
Like he is that good. I don't know who the hell he knows at Apple, but it's always spot on. Eddie Q is his secret uncle. I don't know.
Well, why don't we wrap?
All right.
For this week. You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I am here with Michael Norton, as always. And if you'd like to show your support for this show and the network at large, please go to patreon.com/hologramradio and become a regular donator like all the other lovely, handsome, wonderful people that have decided to donate their hard-earned cash every month. You can subscribe to the show in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And if you are in iTunes, why not drop a rating? And if you do that, we will personally give you a shout-out on a future episode of this podcast. And you can show your support by shopping at Amazon through one of our affiliate links. We have Amazon UK, USA, and Canada over at hologramradio.org/sponsors. There's no additional work needed on your part. Just click on one of those links and you will get to buy the same stuff that you've always wanted to buy off your wish list, only that we get a portion of the sale. You can follow the show on Twitter at The Impromptu. Michael Norton's at Zen Impulse. I'm Alex Knight at Zero Distraction. We're at Hologram Radio Shows on Instagram, Hologram Radio on Facebook, pretty much everywhere. And if you'd like to send feedback to either of us, you can email The Impromptu at hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.